An agreement allowing for the export of Ukrainian grain through the Black Sea gets renewed. We'll hear the details from Istanbul.
Ships will leave these Ukrainian ports, go through the Black Sea, through Istanbul, and on to world markets.
Plus, a lot of finger-pointing is going on over the missile attack that killed two people inside Poland.
NATO Secretary General and Poland's President said there was no indication it was a deliberate attack. However, rhetoric was strong at the UN Security Council meeting.
And later in the program, a student from Zambia ended up dead in the Ukrainian war. We'll find out how. Today is November 17th. From the Voice of America in Washington, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish. Ukrainian and Turkish officials said Thursday an agreement allowing for the export of Ukrainian grain through the Black Sea will continue for another 4 months under its current terms. The extension came days ahead of the potential expiration of the original deal that Turkey and the United Nations brokered in July. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres welcomed the extension, saying that the UN is committed to ensuring this vital supply line continues to function smoothly. Reuters' Julian Satterthwaite has more.
Agreement has been reached to extend the Black Sea grains deal. The news came early Thursday. Originally agreed in July, the pact creates a sea corridor for the export of grains from three ports in Ukraine. It's allowed some 11.1 million tons of grain to be shipped, alleviating global food shortages. Kyiv says it will now run for another 120 days. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres hailed the move to extend the agreement.
I want to express my deep commitment and the commitment of the UN to do everything possible for the smooth implementation of this agreement in Istanbul by the Joint Coordination Center.
He said the UN was also committed to removing obstacles to Russian exports of grains and fertilizers. That's a part of the deal that Moscow sees as critical. Such exports aren't officially affected by Western sanctions, but Russia complains they have been made difficult in practice. A Reuters source says negotiations continue over the country's exports of ammonia, a key ingredient in fertilizers. A UN official said solving the fertilizer crunch should be next on the to-do list. Grain prices fell following news of the extension. Wheat futures dropped over 2.5%, with corn also down.
Julian Satterthwaite reporting. For more context, I spoke with our correspondent, Dorian Jones, in Istanbul. He's been following the story.
Well, the grain deal basically lifts an effective Russian blockade on Ukrainian ports in the Black Sea, which is the main hub for distributing Ukrainian grain to world markets. And Ukraine is one of the major suppliers of grain to the world. Now, under this deal, which is coordinated in Istanbul by Ukrainian, Russian, United Nations and Turkish officials, ships will leave these Ukrainian ports, go through the Black Sea, through Istanbul and on to world markets.
So just how important is this deal to the world food supply?
Well, it's crucial. I mean, Ukraine is one of the major suppliers to world market, in particular countries that are most need of grain, Africa, the Middle East. And the risk of Ukrainian grain being prevented from entering the markets saw world food prices, grain prices surge. And in areas which heavily depend on grain, imported grain, countries invariably which are very poor, that risks exacerbating already existing famines in many places and presenting the risk of further famines. And charity groups, United Nations, all warned that this deal had to continue to prevent what many described as a humanitarian catastrophe. There's a big sigh of relief now that the deal at least has been renewed for another 120 days.
Is it just Ukrainian exports? Are the Russians trying to export anything too?
Yes, according to this deal, and United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres, he underlined this isn't only about Ukraine, this is also about Russian Ukraine, and also, crucially, Russian fertilizer. because not only with grain is extremely important, but Russian fertilizer is also seen as very important to world markets. Russia is one of the biggest suppliers of fertilizer. So this is also another key issue that is seen as important to address. And this is considered to be part of the deal.
So surely Moscow thinks this is a good deal, something they want to be a part of. What's in it for them?
Well, undoubtedly, I mean, this deal, grain deal, is seen by Moscow as one of the important pieces of leverage it does have on the world, and in particularly its adversaries in the West, which have been imposing these very tough sanctions, which have been increasingly hurting the Russian economy. They see this on this grain deal as an opportunity to ease those sanctions. On their part, they argue that this grain deal is not only about Ukraine, it's also about Russian grain and Russian fertilizer entering world markets. And they feel that part of that deal has to be that they allow to receive payments for these. And this, they argue, Moscow argues, must include easing some sanctions on some of their banks. Now, it's unclear how Washington and how the European Union view those requests from Moscow. But undoubtedly, and Ankara has always argued this, and they are key to the facilitating of this deal, that every party has to win with this deal, because otherwise it won't work. So given the fact that Moscow has agreed to it, there is a speculation that they have got at least something they've been demanding.
You mentioned Ankara's involvement. You are in Istanbul. How is this viewed in Turkey?
Well, I mean, I think this is one thing that all the parties, United Nations, Russia and Ukraine, agree on, that Turkey has and is continuing to play a very important role in facilitating this deal, and particularly the role of the Turkish president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, Moscow, Kyiv, and the Secretary General reiterated their thanks and underlined the important role Erdogan has played, because Erdogan does have this rare position of having good relations with both the Russian and the Ukrainian leaders. And he's seen as very much playing a very key role in making this deal happen and for it to continue. And the way the deal itself is administered here in Istanbul. So in many ways, this is a very big win again for President Erdogan, and will reiterate his claims and vindication of saying that he needs to have good relations with both Russia and Ukraine, and that includes, controversially, not imposing Western sanctions on Moscow.
Increased tension at the UN, Moscow, Kyiv, Warsaw, and elsewhere, as finger-pointing continues surrounding a deadly missile strike Tuesday in Poland. The UN and Poland say they don't believe it was a Russian attack, but rather a Ukrainian-launched air defense missile that accidentally caused the disaster. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky at first denied this charge, and the Russians insinuated that this was all a ploy by NATO to expand the war. Karen Chamas has more.
The U.S. and the West has clashed with Russia over responsibility for a deadly missile strike in Poland near the Ukrainian border. The missile killed two people in the village of Shevudov in Poland. U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres called the incident a frightening reminder of the need to stop the nine-month war from escalating. NATO Secretary General and Poland's president said there was no indication it was a deliberate attack. However, rhetoric was strong at the U.N. Security Council meeting, where Russia's ambassador Vasily Nebenzia insisted the missiles were Ukrainian and a conscious attempt to involve NATO, which is conducting a proxy war with Russia in Ukraine, to involve it into direct conflict with our country. The U.S. ambassador to the UN, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, said Russia is still accountable despite what comes from the investigation into the missile strike.
This tragedy would never have happened but for Russia's needless invasion of Ukraine.
I'm Karen Chamas.
For more on the situation, I spoke with Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. The United Nations and Poland have each said that the missile attack, the missile blast there, seems to be the result of a Ukrainian-fired defensive missile. Zelensky resisted a little bit. Can you tell us what he said and what the mood in Kyiv is?
Yes. So, of course, it's first of all, I should say that for Ukrainian nation, well, it's really a very sad news, and Ukrainians send their condolences to the citizens of Poland, and President Zelensky himself as well did the same. What we heard from President Zelensky right after the accident. He said, and you are correctly, you absolutely correctly when you are saying that he said that it was not Ukrainian missile. At least preliminary, it was his assumption. So just recently, he had another speech during the Bloomberg New Economy Forum conference, and basically he said that Ukrainian experts will join the investigation team of Polish experts and U.S. experts to find out the truth. He said that depending on what investigation will found, could be the missile, the air defense missile used by Ukraine. And he basically highlighted that it's not sure what exactly had happened. So he was not very, you know, he was not saying in this latest speech that it was not Ukrainian air defense missile. He said that investigation should find out, and all details should be find out as a result of this investigation.
You had mentioned that a Ukrainian team will join the investigation in Poland. Is that official now?
Well, this is what President Zelensky mentioned. And according to what a Polish side said, that neither Poland experts nor U.S. experts have anything against that. So according to the latest information that we are hearing, of course, we cannot verify it independently for the moment. And it was not an official announcement yet. But according to what we're hearing from President office and from Polish and U.S., experts who are working on the scene already, that Ukrainians might join. And for the moment, at least how it is presented, it looks like this is happening sometime soon. Also, we know that Ukrainian side already provided all the data that Ukrainians had on their side in terms of the usage of air defense missiles on that day, and exactly how they were used and where they were used. So basically, Ukrainians already kind of participated in the investigation by providing the data. So this is what we have for the moment.
You're listening to Flashpoint Ukraine from the Voice of America. I'm Steve Karish. The Pentagon hosted the 7th Ukraine Defense Contact Group Wednesday for Ukraine's allies to virtually collaborate on their support for Ukraine's military. Mark Miley is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the top U.S. general. He assessed the situation in Ukraine and also warned that China would be playing a very dangerous game should it try to take Taiwan by force. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has the details.
The Pentagon says the U.S. and its allies will continue to support Ukraine in its fight against Russian aggression for as long as it takes, despite a blunt assessment from the top U.S. general that military victory for either side is likely unachievable in the near term.
The probability of Russia achieving its strategic objectives of conquering Ukraine, of overrunning Ukraine, the probability of that happening is close to zero. But they do currently occupy about 20% of that of Ukraine. So in terms of probability, the probability of a Ukrainian military victory defined as kicking the Russians out of all of Ukraine, to include what they define or what they claim as Crimea, to the probability of that happening anytime soon is not high militarily.
But he said a near-term political solution for peace was possible.
You want to negotiate from a position of strength. Russia right now is on its back. The Russian military is suffering tremendously.
The Russian military has taken heavy losses of soldiers and military equipment since Moscow's invasion of Ukraine in February.
The numbers of precision-guided munitions that they've rifled through in this endeavor is striking. And so it may take years for them to restock that inventory up to the point that they were before they started this conflict.
Do you think the Russians can hold out the years that you say it would take for them to fully resupply?
I don't think the Ukrainians are going to allow them to hold out. I think the Ukrainians are going to continue to pressure them And so this, this battlefield dynamic will change, you know, continue to change.
The top U.S. general also warned China on Wednesday against invading Taiwan, calling any military invasion across the strait a, quote, very dangerous game.
But I think that the Chinese would be high risk to take on an operation like that. And I think it would be unwise. It would be a political mistake, a geopolitical mistake, a strategic mistake, similar to what the strategic mistake is that Putin has made in Ukraine.
Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
The African nation of Zambia is seeking answers after a Zambian student who was serving a prison sentence in Russia ended up dying on the battlefront in Ukraine. VOA's Steve Miller speaks with reporter Kathy Short in Lusaka, Zambia.
Kathy, can you please take a moment and tell us a little bit about Lemekhani Nathan Nerenda, this 23-year-old young man from Zambia who died in Ukraine. Really, who was he and why was he in Russia and ultimately in Ukraine?
So according to information from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Lemekhani Nathan Nerenda was a nuclear engineering student at the Moscow Engineering Physics Institute. And he was on a scholarship, on a Zambian government scholarship, to study there in Russia. So he was, according to people that know him, have been on Twitter and other social media sites, he was described as a very gifted young man that had a very, very promising future. His father, Edwin Nerenda, told Reuters news agency that the student was working as a part-time courier when an unknown person handed him a package containing drugs. And it was at this point that Nerenda was arrested and convicted to 9 years in prison because of possessing drugs. And the father also said that they don't know who took his son from prison to the battlefront, and that the family only received a message from a man that they do not know in Russia, who said that there was a will that the deceased left and that they should travel to Russia. And also, I must mention that Zambia and Russia have had this long tradition of sending Zambian students on government scholarships to study in Russia. So there are quite a number of Zambian students studying in Russia.
What is known about the circumstances of Nathan's death in Ukraine and really how the family was notified? Because it's been reported that Nathan apparently died on September 22nd. But Zambian officials and the family weren't notified till after November 9th.
That's correct. And even the Zambian foreign minister, in his statement, indicated that they didn't understand why it took so long for Russian authorities to inform the Zambian government about Nathan Lemekhani's death, and also that his body was transported to Rostov in preparation for his body to be sent back to Zambia. So really, there are all these issues that are hanging in terms of his death. Not so much information is known. All we know is that the Minister of Foreign Affairs here has visited the family and that they are awaiting official communication from the Russian government, which hasn't been forthcoming.
Kathy, as you mentioned, there are a lot of unknowns as to what happened. What are some of the discussions that either Zambian officials or the family are having?
Yes, the Minister of Foreign Affairs made it very, very clear that they are seeking for answers from Russia, and that they want to understand why the deceased Lemekhani Nathan Nerenda found himself at the battlefront instead of serving the 9-year prison sentence. And there's been some discussions. I think there was a video recently in September, a leaked video that showed a Russian mercenary group, Wagner, recruiting prisoners to fight in Ukraine. And so there have been discussions here on Twitter, people that knew Nathan Lemikani and other Zambians saying that he could have been in a very, very difficult position to sort of want to be free. So he may have been forced to choose between going to the battlefront or staying in prison. And so he may have chosen the latter, to go to the battlefront, where unfortunately he died. And from the information that we have is that Lemekani Nathan Nurenda was a civilian and he had never had any military training. So there's a lot of anger amongst the Zambians, especially in Lusaka, where Lemekani's family is and where he lived, and he hails from here, actually. So there's a lot of anger, and people have questions about this. And the common word is disheartened. And, you know, I'm at my lowest moment this week because of the news of the young man dying in Russia between two foreign countries. And then also some people are saying that the death of Lemekani Nathan Nurenda clearly shows Russia's disregard for international law.
Kathy, I wanted to ask you about that, because how are people in Lusaka, Zambia's capital, reacting, and really throughout the nation?
They're saying it's devastating news. And there are others that are saying also that if it were someone maybe from a developed nation, Russia maybe would have responded, you know, earlier. And some are saying that this is a war crime and an act of total disrespect and disregard for the people of Zambia. And they're saying that if it was an African country that did the same, the retaliation would be immediate. But it's us. So another person says, and this person actually claims to Pierre Wiza, claims to have been a classmate of Lemekani. And he says, why should some selfish interests affect everyone? And he says, just the audacity to deliberately forget international law by Russia is shocking. I'm really saddened by this. It's hitting home. The Ukraine-Russia war is far away from Zambia, but this death has just brought it home. And people feel, you know, they're affected in one way or another, even though they may not have known the deceased. The pain is being felt.
Kathy Short is a journalist from Lusaka, Zambia. Kathy, thank you.
You're welcome.
As the Kremlin escalates its war on Ukraine and tightens its clampdown on any opposition to the invasion, the world of Russian arts and culture, historically opposed to violence and war, descends into pessimism. Marcus Harton narrates this report from the VOA Moscow Bureau.
The arts in Russia have been among the casualties of the Ukraine war, with hundreds of artists, including theater performers, fleeing the country after voicing opposition to the conflict or attempting to avoid conscription. But not all artists are leaving. Some use their work to defy the Kremlin's policy and give Russians an outlet, a way to show they retain their humanity. Marina Dmitrovskaya. She says, we also thought about suspending our annual festival, but we decided to organize a program with five shows that give viewers the chance to laugh, cry, how to face adversity, how to continue being a person. Russia's war in Ukraine, now in its ninth month, weighs heavily every day on the minds of Russians who oppose it. The arts remain a small window through which they can escape what has for many become a tragic and endless drama. For the VOA Moscow Bureau, Marcus Harton, VOA News.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.